Hi there. Just a quick note that if you're hearing this, it means you haven't yet upgraded to the Misfit feed. I encourage you to become a Misfit right now and immediately unlock every single full-length episode that I've ever done. And you can immediately start learning from some of the greatest entrepreneurs in history. It is absolutely insane how much you can learn for such a small investment, but don't take my word for it. Let me just read a couple of the testimonials from Misfits. It says, I just paid for my first premium podcast subscription for Founders Podcast. Learning from those who came before us is one of the highest value ways to invest time. David does his homework and exponentially improves my efficiency by focusing on the most valuable lessons. Another person said, I stumbled upon this podcast. After one episode, I quickly joined the Misfit feed since $5 a month is the equivalent of a few cups of coffee for great detailed biographies on amazing leaders. I love the insights and thoughts shared along the way. David loves what he does and it shines through on the podcast. Definitely my go-to podcast now. And just one more before I get into today's preview. It is worth every penny. I cannot put into words how fantastic this podcast is. Just stop reading this and get the full access now. I agree with every single one of them, obviously. I hope you do as well. If you do, tap the link that's in your show notes on your podcast player or go to founderspodcast.com. It takes less than a minute to set up and you can start learning from some of the greatest minds in history. He lives in a simple house in a small southern town. He's been married to the same woman for almost 5 decades. He drives a Chevy, dresses in store-bought clothes, and puts in long hours at his job. He also made for himself and his family over $9 billion, more than any other man in America. This extraordinary person is Sam Walton, and this fascinating, superbly researched book pierces his carefully cultivated cloak of ordinariness to show what makes him tick and what made him succeed beyond the wildest dreams of wealth. It is a story and a quest that began in the Dust Bowl of Oklahoma in the Depression, where a small boy saw firsthand the razor-thin line between survival and disaster. It was a lesson that stood him in good stead when he took an $85 a month job with JCPenney and learned the principles of putting customer satisfaction over profits. In 1945, he bought a five-and-dime store in Newport, Arkansas, and began to put his ideas on how to make money to the test. The first Walmart was born, and while the rest is history, the story of Sam Walton is also the story of those ideas and how they work through good times and bad to create one of the greatest triumphs in the annals of American retailing. What is most heartening of all about Sam Walton's spectacular success in this era notorious for greed, fraud, and financial shenanigans are his old-fashioned principles of doing business, virtues of honesty and hard work. This rags-to-riches tale also reveals what others, both rivals and employees, boosters and critics, think of the wealthiest man in America and his methods. And Sam Walton himself tells how he has coped not only with success but with setback, working 16-hour days to pursue his passion for business perfection while remaining true to himself and devoted to his family. For anyone looking for irresistible reading and a truly remarkable human being, meet Sam Walton, the plain folk's genius who is utterly unique. That was an excerpt from the book that I'm going to talk to you about today, which is Sam Walton, The Inside Story of America's Richest Man, and it was written by Vance H. Trimble. Interesting to note, as far as I can tell, the author is still alive. I just actually ordered another book of his based on the founder of FedEx. And if that's accurate, if he's still alive, he is 107 years old. I found that very interesting. Before I jump into the book, I want to bring up this quote that I learned from Charlie Munger that I've never forgotten. And Charlie's famous from being a biography nut and studying the lives and the history of business and investing and everything else. And this is what he said about Sam Walton. And it's one of the quotes that I always try to refer back to because I think it's something I try to aspire to myself. And he says, it's quite interesting to think about Walmart starting from a single store in Arkansas against Sears, Sears Roebuck with its name, reputation, and all of its billions. How does a guy in Bentonville, Arkansas, with no money, blow right by Sears? And he does it in his own lifetime. In fact, during his own late lifetime because he was already pretty old by the time he started out with one little store. And this is the most important part of the quote. He played the chain store game harder and better than anyone else. Walton invented practically nothing, but he copied everything anybody else ever did that was smart, and he did it with more fanaticism. So he blew right by them all. Okay, so with that, let me go to the very beginning of the book. I thought this was a really interesting part. And it talks about his desire for anonymity. At this point in the story, he's already the richest American. And the most Americans didn't even know who he was. Reporters start discovering, hey, it's not a Rockefeller, it's not a DuPont, it's not a Kennedy. But it's actually this strange guy out in the middle of nowhere, Arkansas. So it says, for his first 50 or 60 years, Sam Walton was not at all a national figure. He remained in the shadows, off the beaten track, and that's the way he definitely preferred it. So he talks about the reporters. He said, their digging soon enabled them to write in their notebooks that he grew up in Missouri in the Depression, worked his way through college, lived a clean life, served stateside in World War II, married an Oklahoma banker's daughter, opened up his first Fine & Dime store in Backwater, North Central Arkansas, and raised four healthy kids. These are the two most important sentences of this section, in my opinion. Pretty darn ordinary, only on the surface. Sam Walton, underneath, was no ordinary man. He was a genius in business with an iron mind, some say pig-headed, unwilling to compromise any of his carefully thought-out policies and principles. And this next paragraph made me think of something I learned when I read all of Warren Buffett's shareholder letters. I'll read that to you after this section. To him, making money was only a game, a test of his imagination and expertise to see how far he could drive a business concept. Wall Street had a hard time getting the drift of that. Sam's idea, he readily admitted, was absurdly simple. Buy cheap, sell low every day, and do it with a smile. And so let me read a quote from one of Warren Buffett's shareholder letters. And I think it's really important. If you haven't already done so, go back and listen to the podcast I did where I read every single, it's like 60 years, something like that, 54 years or something of his shareholder letters. And the reason I think it's important is because I don't know if there's another person alive. Think about it. He's probably close to 90 years old by now, that has studied more businesses than Warren Buffett. So I think if you read his shareholder letters, you derive all the insights that he's accumulated over his multiple decade career, and a lot of things stick out that I think are valuable to us. And this idea, where I'm going to relate it back to what the author is telling us here, that you know his idea is really, really simple, and people don't understand that it doesn't have to be complex. Well, Warren also told us about that in his shareholder letters, and this is what he says. Our investments continue to be few in number and simple in concept. The truly big investment idea can usually be explained in a short paragraph. We like a business with enduring competitive advantages that is run by able and owner-oriented people. That's a great description of Sam Walton. This is the point I really want to bring to your attention, though. Investors should remember that their scorecard is not computed using Olympic diving methods. Degree of difficulty doesn't count. If you are right about a business whose value is largely dependent on a single key factor that is both easy to understand and enduring, the payoff is the same as if you had correctly analyzed an investment alternative characterized by many constantly shifting and complex variables. So granted, degree of difficulty doesn't count. That doesn't mean it's a simple idea. It's obviously very hard to achieve and to do over multiple decades, which is what Sam Walton did. But that idea, buy low, sell cheap, every day. And I think it's important to point out at this point in the story because, you know, people can confuse a simple idea with an ordinary person. Sam Walton is not ordinary at all. Sam Walton out-Spartans the Spartan. It was just part of his real life. And I'll talk more about some of the characteristics that he would share with Spartans, which is what the author's referencing there. Something to note, he hated being on the Forbes list. He did not like the attention. He says the fact that the Forbes magazine set him at top of the list of America's 400 richest people disturbed him greatly. He granted very few interviews. He turned his back on most TV cameras. He shuddered each time another magazine piece appeared. This next part was interesting because it's really saying that Sam is flexible, but he's also he's inflexible and flexible at the same time. Really, the way to summarize him is he just always wanted the best ideas, and he didn't care where they came from. Sam Walton is flexible. If he adopts a business course that doesn't work out, he's neither too vain nor too blind to see his mistake, and to say so and change his heading 180 degrees. It usually requires major persuasion by trusted lieutenants or his own recognition of unusual circumstance to let reason override his natural inflexibleness. So we see a little bit of a dichotomy there between his natural tendencies and then his ability to be flexible when he realizes, hey, I made a mistake and you actually have the better idea, so let's do that. So I'm going to tell you a little bit more about his early life. And this is his father. I would say the influence of his father played a major role in who he was. And at this point, we see that even from an early age, he has the traits of the Spartans that the author is referencing. Duty, discipline, endurance. I would say Sam had all three of these traits in spades. Sam was going out for football and basketball, learning to play tennis, making A's and more friends, grinding away on merit badges. He was in the Boy Scouts in hopes of becoming an Eagle Scout. He regularly attended Sunday school and would scramble after odd jobs such as grass mowing or anything else. He also delivered newspapers that might put some money in his pocket. No one in the Walton household worked harder except his father. This is now a quote from his father, Thomas. The secret is work, work, work. I taught the boys how to do it. He was a bear for work and would not tolerate sons who were not likewise industrious, ambitious, and decent. Really no surprise there when you learn that his father had to struggle through the Great Depression. Just a little bit about that. We lived there for several years, said Sam. My father quit the mortgage company and went into business for himself, real estate and insurance. Then came the Depression. Dad's business went down the drain. In this humdrum fashion, so he's just scrambling like almost everybody else in the country, trying to find any way to feed his family. In this humdrum fashion, about 10 prime years of Tom and Nan, that's Sam's mom, the 10 prime years of their lives skittered away with no perceptible climb for the family up the social or economic ladders. They were still lower middle class, not poor, but dangerously close to it. And now they, along with millions of other Americans, were in the cruel clutches of the Great Depression. Sam and his brother Bud were expected to work hard, be thrifty, and not be wasteful of anything. Sam's about, I would say 12 or 13 at this time. He says, Sam Walton was already revealing the character traits that would dominate his future life. He stood out as an individual, different, no doubt about that. He was soft-spoken and quiet, yet despite being shy, he was a natural leader. He never got excited about anything. I would say externally. He didn't show his excitement externally, but he definitely had a fire and a drive internally. More advice from his dad. He was being fed excellent advice by his father. If he wanted to achieve high and lofty goals, he must be willing to buckle down to work hard. So I want to tell you a little bit about high school Sam Walton, which I feel is very different from most of the people that we've studied on the podcast. Most are misfits. They don't do well in school. They're rebellious. They don't listen to anybody. A lot of them get expelled or kicked out of school. High school Sam was essentially the model student, the perfect person. Listen to this. This blew my mind. He was the quarterback of the undefeated football team. He lettered in basketball. He was president of the student body. This guy's a machine. He's absolutely insane. And you don't... What I love about Sam Walton, if you look at pictures of him, you know, you just see like a normal person. And that to me is just a costume. You have an absolute psychopath is not the right word. He's just one of the most driven individuals you will ever meet, as you can imagine from all these accolades that he's already getting. He was voted the most versatile boy. Sam was in just about every club and organization, and he was active. Sam was a hard worker. He was optimistic all the time. He had a great smile on his face and felt like everybody was his friend and the world was something he could conquer. Walton was living up to his dad's work, 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 work ethic. In high school, in addition to his man-killing regimen of academics and athletics, he found time for odd jobs and was becoming self-supporting. He would roll out of bed at dawn and delivered newspapers. And he also significantly worked part-time at a 5 and 10 cent store, excuse me. When he actually opens one called Walton 5 and Dime, I think is what it was called. And then this is a great summary of the section. He just didn't waste time. He was always busy doing something. So I want to skip ahead in his life, and I love this because I think it's a reminder. I think everybody experiences this, not just Sam Walton, but he's a young adult. He has no idea. No idea what he's going to do for a living. He had no idea what his career would be. I thought it was hilarious, the one idea he did have. So it says, Sam Walton virtually tossed all of his dreams for the future up in the air to see how they landed. I really had no idea what I would be, he said. At one point in time, I thought I wanted to be president of the United States. So this is actually where he just decides, hey, I'm just going to take up. He didn't really have a passion for retail. He just had to learn it. So he starts working at JCPenney. He says, I interviewed at JCPenney and I liked what I heard. They offered me a job at $85 a month. Sam Walton plunged into this new world of merchandising with the keen and furious dedication of a quarterback who was one touchdown behind with 2 minutes to go. Sam Walton knew little of the scope of the JCPenney company chain. And this is fascinating because they were around when I was younger. I don't even know if they exist anymore. But in Sam's day, they were, you know, almost like the Walmart of their day. Obviously, their scope is a lot more narrow in terms of what they sell, but it was a wonderfully successful company. So it says he didn't understand the scope of the JCPenney company chain and absolutely no details of the personality and meteoric rise of the old man himself. That's John Cash Penny, and John Cash is actually gonna teach Sam something on an individual basis. He would learn more soon, including one profitable lesson taught him personally by John. When the founder was age 65. And this is the very beginning of what we see Sam's lifelong trait that everybody that we study on the podcast has. And it's just this idea that I'm going to constantly search for good ideas. And when I find a great one, I'm going to steal it. In fact, he would steal or borrow, is perhaps a more precise word, John Cash Penny's whole concept of how to succeed by putting customer satisfaction ahead of profit. JCPenney himself arrived in town and spent a lot of time wandering around the store. This is like something Sam does later in life as well. A customer came in and bought something from Sam, and while he wrapped it up for her, JCPenney was observing the transaction closely. He waits for the transaction to close, the customer to leave, and then he walks over to Sam. I finished wrapping and tying the package, and the lady left, said Sam. Then Mr. Penny came over. Boys, he said, I want to show you something. And he took out a box about the same size, and he went around it with paper and let it overlap like that, maybe a quarter of an inch. Then he went around it with twine one time like this and one time like that, and he tied it. He said, this is such an interesting idea. He said, boys, you know we don't make a dime out of the merchandise we sell. We only make our profit out of the paper and string we save. In Sam's memory, those days are still vivid. I actually talked about when I covered Sam's autobiography, which is fantastic. I think it might be Founders number 6, or it's one of the first books I did for the podcast. If you haven't read the book, you should buy it immediately. It's fantastic. It's probably the one book that Jeff Bezos gave out more as gifts than any other book. Okay, so let me go back to this part. This is Sam remembering this time about how important his manager at JCPenney was. This is a guy named Duncan. And he says, the manager was a fantastic trainer. He used to invite us out to his house nearly every Sunday to play ping pong, eat, and talk business. You could learn a lot, how to do it, and better. He was one manager who had a 25% bonus contract. So this is also another idea that Sam steals in the early days of Walmart. I don't even know if it was Walmart at the time. It's like he has like this 15-year career before he starts Walmart, where he's still doing experiments and owning all these retail stores. But the one way he would do it is to recruit the best talent, he would give them a percentage of the profits, usually a large percentage, like 25%, like this manager has here. So it says he got his bonus check. It was $65,000. Remember, Sam is working for $85 a month. This had to blow his mind, right? He waved that around one Sunday, and that just made us run faster and work harder. Sam Walton's training time in Des Moines, this is where he's living at the time, doubtless put several hundred dollars into the company till, but what he learned would eventually put a few billion into his own cash registers. So now I want to tell you when he opens his first store. And he's got a lot of good ideas, but the most important part of this section is he makes a drastic, terrible mistake. And I think learning that is really important. Keep in mind, he is 27 years old at this point in the story. So it says he thought Lady Luck was giving him a nifty break. He didn't know just how fickle she can be. He had been out of the army just a few weeks, and now he had stumbled into a chance to buy the franchise of a Ben Franklin Five and Dime store. So he starts out as a franchisee. He actually gets the money, this is important too, for the first store. From his father-in-law, who's a successful entrepreneur in his own right and a banker, and also taught Sam a lot. So it says he was willing to lend his son-in-law the $25,000 needed to swing the deal. And he's going to have a lot for the first 5.5 years of owning the store. Remember, he only has one store, which is really fascinating. he's obsessed and driven. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about that before I get to this mistake. All right, he's already made the mistake, but realizing how big the mistake was. The most important discovery Sam Walton made in Newport, he's in Newport, Arkansas, was that there was a charm and satisfaction in retailing that he had not fully expected. Sam Walton was crazy about selling and about satisfying customers, completely obsessed but also driven. In the recesses of Sam Walton's mind, there lurked volatile and not-to-be-denied impulses. That's just really good writing because that gives you, this paragraph really puts like an image in your mind, or at least it put an image in my mind when I'm reading this, because he is a very charming, you know, even-keeled person, but it's like Kobe Bryant, if Kobe Bryant was a retailer. This is Sam Walton. He's just completely obsessed with being number one. In the recesses of Sam Walton's mind, there lurked volatile and not-to-be-denied impulses that drove him to challenge the status quo of many things and to conjure up new business experiments. Now, this next sentence, these next two sentences is insane when you realize that his next rival, remember, he's in a tiny town. I think there's like 2,000 people in this town, a very small town. And when you hear like how, let me just read it to you. I'm not going to run over my point. What am I doing here? The sales volume grew astonishingly each year. He ran it for 5.5 years, okay? For the year 1948, Sam racked up sales of $225,000. His next nearest competitor was doing sales of $25,000. That's insane. Then Lady Luck deserted him. The fantastic way in which Sam built up and enlarged his sales volume beyond anything that had ever been done before by a Newport five and dime store caught the eye of his landlord. Now, here's this gigantic, gigantic mistake. So what does that mean? He's like, well, this guy's coming over here. He's demonstrating to us that these stores can be a lot more profitable, make a lot more money than we expected. So the mistake Sam made is he didn't have any kind of renewal. It's not like, okay, I'm going to renew in 5 years and it's going to be capped at, 10% increase or whatever. So the landlord's essentially saying, I'm not going to renew the lease, and then I'm going to put a Ben Franklin store in your same spot, and all that money is going to go to me. So that is a bad luck and a massive mistake. But really, I argue, based on the two books now I've read about Sam Walton and what I've studied, I think what's about to happen here is actually the most important decision of his life. So let's go to the book. Sam's lawyer is trying to negotiate with the landlord. It's not working out. The guy's he's stonewalling him. So it says the lawyer offered tons of other stuff. He didn't accept. He tried to interest the landlord in various different terms, but kept running into a stonewall. Then finally, he grasped the real situation. It's no good, he told Sam. I hope to God the next time you take over a lease from somebody, you check to make certain it contains a proper renewal clause. They're not going to let you keep the store. The plain truth is that they want some other guy that they do, I think it might be his son or somebody he's doing business with, to run a Ben Franklin in that building. You've shown the whole town what a moneymaker it can be. The lawyer watched the color drain out of his client's face. It looks like you're finished, he said. And now this is the most important decision, in my opinion, of Sam Walton's life. It's the part that gets you fired up when you read it. The lawyer saw Sam clenching and unclenching his fists, staring at his hands. Sam straightened up. No, he said. I'm not whipped. I found Newport and I found the store. I can find another good town and another Ben Franklin. Just wait and see. And why do I think that's the most important part? Because, there's an alternate reality where Sam Walton's like, oh, this guy whipped me. You know what? Maybe retailing's not meant for me. I'll close up shop. I'll go work somewhere else. And he's like, no, okay, I'm emboldened by this. Okay, I made a mistake. That's fine. But the last 5.5 years, I learned a lot. I proved to myself I can do it, and I'll just do it again. Thanks for making it to the end of this preview. If you want to continue listening to the full episode, you'll need to upgrade to the Misfit feed. By upgrading, you'll get access to every full episode that I've ever done. These episodes are available nowhere else. And as a bonus, you also get lifetime access to my notebook that contains key insights from over 285 podcasts and lectures on entrepreneurship. As a way to illustrate why it is so important for you to learn the lessons from all the biographies that I analyze on the Misfit feed, I have some quotes that I've collected from other people who have discovered the value in reading biographies, and they explain to you and I why this activity is so valuable. So the first quote comes from the founder of Shopify, Toby Lutke, and he says, "Books are the closest you will ever come to finding cheat codes for real life. you can access the entire learnings of someone else's career in a few hours. This quote from Mark Andreessen on why he reads biographies. There are thousands of years in history in which lots and lots of very smart people worked very hard and ran all types of experiments on how to create new businesses and invent new technology. They ran these experiments throughout their entire lives. At some point, somebody put these ideas down in a book. For very little money and a few hours of time, you can learn from someone's accumulated experience. There is so much more to learn from the past than we often realize. You could productively spend your time reading experiences of great people who have come before you and learn every time. And finally, this quote from the book, The Tao of Charlie Munger, on why Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett have both read hundreds of biographies in their lifetime. Reading personal biographies allows ones to experience multiple lives and successes and failures. Reading business biographies allows one to experience the vicissitudes of a business and learn how problems were solved. Both Charlie and Warren are copious readers of personal and business biographies. So upgrade now by tapping the link that's in your show notes on your podcast player or going to founderspodcast.com.